This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's that, Carter?
Kanye.
Ah, I like it. Sterling Bennett. Carter Chickering. Dan DeVoe. On a Saturday before the big game. What's the big game? No, it's not Cal Stanford. But rather the big game this weekend in the NFL. It's a rematch of the Super Bowl from 2019, including last year's Super Bowl. That being the 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Here we go. Boy, there has been a lot of talk about this one, and with good reason. First of all, is Tom Brady on the call for this one? Does anybody know? He is. Yeah, so Tom Brady, once again, who is about...
Can he be on the call if he now owns the Raiders?
Well, he can't go to any of the meetings. Like, he doesn't have access to any of the players, which
he can't do almost anything to actually do a job. So, like, what are we doing?
Well, it might be an out for... I'm telling you, if I'm Fox, I'm one of the executives. I'm like, you know what? This may be an out to get from underneath that $375 million because he's trash. I mean, I love Tom Brady.
Really?
Oh, he's not good. He's not good. He's just not good.
I don't mind him, but he's not the best.
Well, you got to be the best if you're going to make that much money and you're going to be the number one.
Well, that's fair.
And you're going to be on that number one team. Yeah, relegate him to, I don't know, I would even put him on college football so he can get seasoned, but he's just not ready to step into that seat right now. He's become Captain Obvious. Now, his timing's got a little bit better. He's getting in and out, but I saw him, I think he did the Niner game last week, I want to say, but I heard him earlier this week. He's not telling me something I didn't already know. When Tom Brady became an analyst, you're thinking, oh, wow, I'm going to see the game through the eyes of Tom Brady. Tell me some stuff.
It'll be like Tony Romo.
Yeah, and he's just like, I could have seen that. Derek, he told me about five times I was in New York, and so he was doing the Dallas-Baltimore game, and he's like, Derrick Henry, man, he's a load. And Derrick Henry starts running downhill. Have fun tackling him. I'm like, yeah, wow, that's pretty insightful.
Well, I guess my... When you look at everything he can't do now because of his minority stake in the Raiders, it's like a laundry list, like 10 things long. And it's like, how can you be a color commentator in the NFL, which hopefully with time you get better, but how can you actually do what it takes to complete your job and do it at a high level worth $300+ million when you can't do what the average guy getting a couple $100 a game is doing? Like, when I look at him, I'm like, man, like, what's going on? Like, why is Fox even still having him on broadcast? The NFL, I'm sure, can step in at a certain point and say, hey, look, this has to stop. But when I see what he can't do anymore in regards to giving an A-plus effort towards being a broadcaster, it's like, why even have him do games at all?
Yeah, that might rear its head. It really might. I mean, if I don't know the outs are on this contract, but the $375, just like Deshaun Watson's deal out there in Cleveland, you don't think they're perusing that
goodness.
Thing going like, how the hell do we get out from underneath this? Like, there's got to be some loophole.
But then Kevin Stefanski comes out and is like, we're committed to Deshaun Watson. He's our quarterback. And it's like, why?
Well, that's ownership.
He's
that's
not committed
ownership.
To you guys.
Stefanski's smarter than that. That's ownership that's blowing in his ear, saying, listen, we got to go with this guy. Stefanski, I think if he had it his way, he would go in 25 different directions. And Deshaun Watson, my God, what?
He's terrible.
Remember with Houston, though? Like, back in the day.
He was great.
He was amazing, man. And he came out of that same draft class as Patrick Mahomes. And a lot of people felt that Deshaun Watson back with Houston, I mean, first of all, the deal with Cleveland was ridiculous from the outset. Right?
Yeah.
First of all, you don't have to guarantee the money, Cleveland. They don't do that in the NFL. And you guaranteed all that money. And now he can't throw the ball. He can't run the ball. And he's just, and I know there's a lot going on in his
personal life. He refuses to run, which is insane for a guy of his stature, mobility. He's like, no, I'm not a scrambling quarterback anymore. And it's like, well, that's why they brought you in, to be a dual threat. And he just refuses to. I never thought I would say starting Jameis Winston would be a better route to victory for the Cleveland Browns. Like, that sounds asinine, but that's the case. Jameis gives them the best chance to win, and Deshaun Watson's playing like one of the worst backup quarterbacks in football, let alone starting quarterbacks in football.
You ever watch Dave Portnoy's One Bite, Everybody Knows the Rules, pizza reviews?
If you yes, I have, yes.
I think, you know how those go viral. I think, like, Jameis Winston's pregame speech needs to go viral every week, man. He is absolutely... He's
eating W's, man. Like them crab legs.
He's awesome, man. He is absolutely awesome. So, apparently people are sensitive towards my comments about Tom Brady. Okay, maybe he's not trash. That's a little bit hard. But he's not good. He's just not good.
He's green behind the ears.
And if Chris Collinsworth, and when you talk about Troy Aikman...
Now, here's a guy.
And even Mark Sanchez. There's so many other players that are Moose, who's... There's so many other guys that
Greg Olson.
Ole has got it. Like, that's just... You want insight. You want to hear something that you didn't otherwise know. And you want it to be fluid, and you want... You know, it's difficult to do this stuff, man. It's tough, and you don't have a lot of time to get in and out, and it's a personality thing. And I got to be honest with you, Tom Brady, maybe the greatest of all time, although, you know, we'll get into Patrick Mahomes is narrowing that gap. I know you and I disagreed on that last week, but Tom Brady, as far as a personality, hey, he's not necessarily telling me something I didn't already know. Never in any of his interviews, never even when he retired from football, seeing him on podcasts, never have I found him sort of like engaging as a person.
Yeah.
And not everyone can just transition from being a great player to being a great analyst. And I've never found him as a person, somebody that I'm like, ooh, Tom Brady's speaking. Let me just stop what I'm doing and listen to the guy. Whereas if Troy Aikman's on a show, or if Moose Johnson's talking about something, or if Greg Olson has something to say, or if Chris Collinsworth is doing a show with Rich Eisen or is with Dan Patrick, I'll stop and listen for a couple of minutes because it's usually inside. Well, Tom Brady, I'm like, once you left Giselle or she left you, there's not much going on that I'm really interested in that doesn't involve you throwing a football down the field.
Which is so funny because while the Patriots weren't necessarily boring, they were very successful. They won multiple Super Bowls and were at the center of many controversies, Spygate and all that stuff. But Bill Belichick and Tom Brady may be one of the most boring personality 1-2 punches in NFL history. But Bill Belichick is phenomenal on TV, whether it's Pat McAfee or on some of the NBC stuff he's doing. Like, I want to hear Bill Belichick talk NFL. Yeah. He will tell you things where I'm like, can Belichick replace Brady in the booth?
Yeah,
like,
right.
You get Bill in there, it would be another world of color commentary. I would like to think, with more time, Tom gets better, but for being the greatest quarterback, in my opinion, of all time, he's certainly not the greatest commentator.
You know what he needs, and what Belichick has is some authenticity. Like, Tom, just be yourself. Just pretend you're sitting on a couch and just shoot. Shoot the S with the guys. Just stop trying to be that guy. All right, let's get into Patrick Mahomes. Speaking of the greatest of all times, which is Tom Brady at the quarterback position, Mahomes, according to many, has just been underwhelming this season. The Kansas City Chiefs are, believe it or not, are underdogs, despite being undefeated. I want you break down this game for me, and of course I want you to plug your post-game show tomorrow. But the one thing, and I do want to throw this stat out there, that you know, the one thing about Patrick Mahomes that we all know, he's a competitor, man. And
yeah,
the one stat that jumped out at me, and there's a lot that we can peruse through, but when he's an underdog, which isn't often, and he's an underdog this week, he's been an underdog as the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs some 13 times in his NFL career. The record, 11-1-1. It's not a good idea having this guy taking points. But what do you think of Mahomes? What do you think of the Chiefs and the Niners?
Well, I think with Mahomes this year, he is by far having the worst year of his career. He has the worst touchdown percentage, the highest interception percentage, the lowest yards per game, the lowest rating, and the lowest QBR. All that said, the Chiefs, despite not having scored 30-plus points in 15 straight games, despite having the 30th-ranked red zone offense coming into this game, and a turnover differential of -4, they're coming off a bye week. They've had what roughly on a 14 days of rest. They're going to be on the road against a team they have yet to lose to with Patrick Mahomes playing quarterback. And I just think when you look at Mahomes, it doesn't matter how far he's down. It doesn't matter how favored or unfavored he may be in the game. The last thing you ever want to do is back Patrick Mahomes into a corner. And he's tough to sack already. And even when he throws interceptions with thus far, he has thrown 6 picks through 5 games for Kansas City. He's not been perfect. It's just Patrick Mahomes. It's like Tom Brady, right? You know, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. If he's down by 10 with 6 minutes left, he finds a way. Mahomes always finds a way. And so I know there are a lot of fans out there that say, this is the year. San Francisco finally beats Mahomes. And maybe that's the case. I certainly hope so. I mean, we'll be popping bottles in the studio if that's the case tomorrow. It feels like a massive win San Francisco has to get. But man, like, Mahomes is just that guy you scratch your head saying, how did he get out of that one? And tomorrow, off the bye week, long rest, Kelsey's turning things up again. It's a dreaded day when the Niners have to play Kansas City. And it feels like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, here we go again. Mahomes in San Francisco. What else could go wrong?
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan's never beaten Andy Reid. And the history with Kansas City is well told. They need this game to get... If they lose to Kansas City is firmly planted in their head. Like, this becomes a mental thing. In fact, it's not only Kansas City, but Shanahan is not good against top teams out of the AFC, including Buffalo, including Baltimore, and especially Kansas City. I want to say he's winless against all those teams, and the AFC has really had his number. But Kansas City, certainly, this becomes one of those that if they beat him again, that they own you. And I know that they've been trying to tamper things down out there at practice, and Big Chick, if you can grab a mic here, Carter's been out there at practice, but what's the sort of sentiment over there in Santa Clara these days as far as their preparation for the game?
Of all the practices I've been out to, this Wednesday I went, and it was the most relaxed I've ever seen practice. They just seemed chill as a cucumber, and it was almost excessive, like this is just another game.
Do you think that was purposely done? Like, you know, we want to make sure that we don't get in the trees and get overly excited. Let's, like, purposely tone this down. Could you feel that?
I think more of it is that winning this game does not bring back the Lombardi Trophy.
You know, the one thing that I really want to focus on is, because at some point, once we were done talking about Patrick Mahomes, the other quarterback, Brock Purdy, I think this is going to be his coming out party. I really do. I think that, and you could say, well, it's already happened, but I just think for a lot of the country, you need a game like this. You need to be on the stage again to prove everybody that you're not a system quarterback, that you're not this little guy, this little runt that's been a cute story that was in the 7th round of the last player chosen, but that, like, I have put him, and I'm in this rarefied air, in that same category as a top-tier quarterback like that of a Josh Allen and a Patrick Mahomes. And so what I think often happens is that we just think, oh, Patrick Mahomes, he's godlike. And he is a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I think that we romanticize about guys like that of Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. And I think what's going to come out of this game is that because both of them are going to be in the same arena on the same field, you're going to see that Brock Purdy is not far. not far behind. You're going to see that Brock Purdy is going to go blow for blow for this guy, if not play better than him at the end of the day. And while you're not ready to anoint him as a better quarterback, it's Patrick Mahomes, but I think the collective thought is going to be Brock Purdy is pretty damn close to this guy. And what does that mean? It means that he's pretty damn close to being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And that's where he's at right now. Did you hear what Spags was saying? Spagnuolo, of course, one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL and a guy accredited with a lot of the success in Kansas City. What he said in singling out Brock Purdy, he went as far. Did you hear this, Sterling? He wanted Brock Purdy's personal phone number, his cell phone number after the Super Bowl. And it's something he never does, is obviously call a quarterback or opposing quarterbacks. And he got it, and he tracked him down, and he reached out to Purdy and said, man, you are something else. You are a different quarterback. And what he's incorporating, he said, he pointed out your ability to run with the football. He's like, I had to find your number just to throw you some love and give you your flowers because you are hard as hell to defend. And getting validated by that guy should tell you everything you need to know about Brock Purdy right now.
Well, even further, Spagnuolo also said that Brock Purdy doesn't have a weakness, which maybe a rainy day in Santa Clara might be a weakness for Brock Purdy. But yeah, I think Brock Purdy, and if San Francisco really wants to win this game, which obviously they do, they want to be 4-3, they want to get the haunting ghost that has been the Kansas City Chiefs out of their mind, get over the hump and mentally say, wow, you know, the sun is finally shining against the Kansas City Chiefs for us. But the Chiefs walk into this game having not allowed a 100-yard rusher since week one. Their run defense is top tier in football, near the top. They've stopped Alvin Kamara and other great running backs in the NFL thus far, but that said, that means this game is going to be primarily on the shoulders of Brock Purdy. You talked about a coming out party, right? You're against Mahomes. It's Kansas City. You go back to the Super Bowl. I thought Brock was, he wasn't great, but he was really good, right? Had a strong game, was in positions to win that game multiple times. Had it not been for a blocked field goal, had it not been for some overtime Shanahanigans, if you will, as we call it in overtime, they win that game. And Brock stared into the abyss and came out clean on the other side. And against Kansas City this Sunday, if San Francisco wants to win, and the way they're going to have to win is because of Brock Purdy's arm, his intellect, and his legs. He has to be this offense's driving force. The odds they can run the football are slim to none. Thus, the arm of Brock Purdy, the right arm, that UCL repaired arm, is going to have to lead San Francisco to victory. Whether it's to Deebo Samuel, or Brandon Ayuk, or George Kittle, or the returning Ricky Pearsall, this game is going to be primarily on Brock Purdy to beat a Spagnuolo defense with his arm, which is a massive ask. But if he does that, and he knocks off the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs, we're talking about, you know, no longer is he a game manager or a system quarterback. We're talking about, you know, oh my goodness, you beat the best team in football thus far this year, not named the Vikings, and you beat the best quarterback in the NFL the last 5 years. So this could very easily be Brock Purdy's breakout party, if you will, Dan.
Yeah, you mentioned the Ricky Pearsall part of this, and I don't think that we can do a show without mentioning this guy who is going to be back in uniform on a football field. Like, that in and of itself is ridiculous. When he got shot 7 weeks ago, I don't know where you were when you heard the news. My immediate thinking was, is he alive, right? And he had said, the first responder, he said to this woman, like, am I going to live? And can you imagine if her response was, as she put him into the ambulance, son, not only are you going to live, but you're going to be playing against Kansas City in less than 2 months. I mean,
right, 50 days later.
It's ridiculous that Ricky Pearsall is going to be in uniform. And not, this isn't just a ceremonial. Ladies and gentlemen, let's recognize Ricky Pearsall is here today and everybody gives him a standing ovation. No. He's going to replace Juwan Jennings, who's out with an injury. I think JJ is a no-go, right?
He's going to be inactive, so it's Pearsall's slot receiver role.
He's going to be in the slot, and he's going to be a go-to guy they're going to look for in the red zone. Like he is going to be a potential difference maker. I just think it is really remarkable when you think about just from beginning to end where this guy was just 7 weeks ago.
Well, Carter mentioned practice on Wednesday being relaxed and, you know, just another game, another practice, you know, there is no pressure on them. And while I do think that the vibes there are comfortable, San Francisco feels good, I think a lot of that is due to the return of Ricky Pearsall. I think San Francisco's had their ups and downs this year. Injuries have reared the ugly head. Javon Hargrave's not going to play, obviously. Juwan Jennings isn't going to play. Debo was banged up. Jordan Mason is banged up coming into this game. You know, there has been some negativity on San Francisco's side. Obviously, you're 3-3, you're not where you should have been coming into the year, but watching Ricky Pearsall get shot and 50 days later on the football field, gonna play against Mahomes and Spagnuolo in, you know, let's be honest here, when they drafted Ricky Pearsall, it was to play against Kansas City. Nobody last year in the Super Bowl could separate. Not Debo, not Kittle, not Ayuk. They drafted Pearsall to play in games like this, to be the difference maker and be that second separator for Brock Purdy in this offense. So for him to make his debut against that team he was drafted to essentially beat, it's massive. This team, you can tell, just feels the energy oozing out of him. I think it was Jacob Cowing, their fourth-round receiver they drafted this year, said, "That's the swaggiest white boy I've ever seen in my life." Like, they feel Ricky Pearsall's energy oozing out of him, and I think it almost gives them that calmness that Carter talked about during practice this week. And I think, you know, him being out there is going to be a massive deal for them mentally to hopefully jump that hurdle that's been the Kansas City Chiefs.
Carter, let's hear from Kyle Shanahan talking about the return of his rookie wide receiver.
Yeah, I think more of the guys are just happy for him. You know, they know he's wanted to be a part of this. It's been a crazy story, him delaying to be a part of it, and he's worked to get here, and I know the guys are just excited for him and ready to support him, help him come along.
It's going to be uplifting to see that guy out on the field. I think Brock Purdy is going to be I think Brock Purdy's going to have a big game. I really do. Despite the defensive coordinator, as we saw, what it is that Flores and the Minnesota Vikings were able to disrupt Brock Purdy and the Niners in that game, which the Niners lost to Minnesota. And Spagnuolo has the ability to do that, mix up his blitzes and the man coverage. I mean, he's Spagnuolo at the end of the day. I still think Brock Purdy, with his ability now and the confidence to extend plays, and the ability to run, that's just, you know, that's not something that people really factor in when you're defending the Niners and Brock Purdy. Well, you better now, because the tape is out that Brock Purdy can create on his own. And I think Purdy and the offense are going to be fine. Now, I know that, you know, Kansas City is not not a team that gives up a lot of points, but I think that this game is going to come down to the Niners' defense, which has been sort of hit or miss, more miss than hit, and they have not been that sort of dominant defense that we saw at the beginning of last year. Certainly going back to 2019, the last time they met the Chiefs in a Super Bowl, they were the best defense. Maybe going back to the 2000 Siragusa-led Ray Lewis Baltimore Ravens, but the defense has to get back to at least ending games and not keeping things open or having this sort of head scratcher of like, what's going on here? Why is Seattle making things interesting? Why are we losing to teams like that of Arizona? Kyler Murray's speaking of trash. How is this happening? And the defense has got to get back to where they were, or certainly when you look at the Fred Warners, maybe it's going to take the return of a Dre Greenwald, the maturity of some of these young safeties, but I think the defense is going to be the key, as it often is, if you're going to beat Kansas City tomorrow.
See, I think it's actually the opposite. I think because San Francisco's defense has been so up and down this year, albeit hitting their stride against the Seahawks two Thursdays ago now, I think it's the offense. These dry spells have to stop. This offense has the ability to put up 30-plus points every single week without Christian McCaffrey. And I think, you know, with Debo Samuel and hopefully eventually Juwan Jennings back in 2 weeks' time, but primarily against Kansas City, you have three legit receivers now. You have George Kittle. The Chiefs linebackers have been terrible against the pass this year. Drew Tranquil and Nick Bolton have been 100-plus passer ratings allowed. Brock Purdy against the blitz is fourth this year. When teams run man coverage and cover zero and cover one, Brock Purdy's the third best quarterback in football. So I know we talked about the Chiefs and Spagnuolo. I think this game comes down to San Francisco's offense eliminating those second half drive spells and putting up points. They can do that. I think, you know, you can say this game may be close, and I think it will be, but I don't think we're talking, you know, 21-17. I think San Francisco's offense legitimately has an opportunity to put up 28-30 points in this game and actually win by two scores, or maybe at least by 10 points, because this Chiefs defense has, well, albeit been good against the run, against the pass, Purdy can have himself that career day Dan's talking about.
I'm reading Brown's cold fashioned potato salad as the sleeper for Thanksgiving. Like, that is, I want to know some random Thanksgiving side dishes as we get to a break, but we're going to continue the conversation with the 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's just call it what it is. I think that the 49ers are going to shock the world and win this thing convincingly. I know that's not popular sentiment right now, but, and I don't like making predictions if you know me at all, but I just have a feeling that San Francisco is ready for that game. Does it mean that they're going to beat them when it matters if these two teams meet in the Super Bowl? No idea, but I do think that they're prime for a big win tomorrow. All right, well, let's continue the conversation with my man. It is Sterling Bennett and Dan Avone here on 95.7 The Game.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to 95.7 The Game alongside Sterling Bennett, Carter Chickering. It's Dan Avone to close out the show. Just really quick, before we get into the Niners, I'm seeing here on the text line roasted Brussels sprouts in a horseradish cream sauce. Now that sounds like something I would enjoy, in all seriousness. Roasted Brussels sprouts in a the cream sauce, maybe the horseradish, I'm down with. Brussels sprouts, certainly. I also saw fried apples as being a potential dessert, which might be in my my power alley as well. So, persimmon pie?
What is that?
Well, I know what persimmons are. I've never had it in a pie. Interesting. Keep them out there. I like the randomness. Like, if you can get me away from the cranberry and that casserole that Carter's crushing every year with the marshmallows and the candied yams, please, please. What are we doing here, people? Come on.
We talked
something
about earlier your Halloween. You're a big Halloween guy. Your ideal Halloween night. Forget Thanksgiving. What does your ideal Halloween night look like? Are you a lock the doors, get a bag of candy, and watch some horror movies, or you go out with the family and friends? What are you going to on Halloween?
I mean, I'm willing to. Yeah, no, I don't. I remember the first house that I bought that I had a. This is out in Seattle, and I was so excited for Thanksgiving, and every kid that came by, you know, started to get, like, the sun was going down to about 6:30, and I was just doling out so much candy that by 8 o'clock, I was done. And I was just like, tap dancing to entertain these poor kids. I'm like, I've got like a corn muffin from last Tuesday. I can split it up for you guys. I mean, you have to be very careful in terms of how you ration your candy and not get overly excited when you become that guy. All right, let's get back into the San Francisco 49ers. All right. So I want you to, we're going to go around the room, and I do want you to give me a winner or loser in this football game. And I typically, you know me, something I don't like doing this sort of thing, especially when people talk about the schedule. Oh, you're going to be 3-2 after 5 games. Stop it. How do you know? That's ridiculous to do at the beginning of the year. But this game, I do want to, you know, where are you leaning when it comes to Kansas City and the San Francisco 49ers in this huge game? But before we do that, I think it's interesting that when we thought about this game and you're handicapping this game, did anyone think that the running backs would be Kareem? Is it who's the running? Is it who's getting the start for
Kareem Hunt?
Kareem Hunt is going to get the start.
Kareem Hunt and Carson Steele.
And Carson Steele, the pride of UCLA. That guy was, who thought that Carson Steele would be as good as he is? Hey, listen, Brian Veach.
He stumbled three times, so I wouldn't say he's that good. But,
yeah, but Veach, well, he's playing in the NFL. I mean,
yeah.
Veach, for the GM for that of the Kansas City Chiefs, he is about, it may be him and everybody else right now. He's as good as he gets.
Well, Howie Roseman's up there, too.
And for the 49ers, if I was to say it's Kareem Hunt in the beginning of the year, and listen, Isaac Garendo is a good chance that he's going to get the mother load coming tomorrow. Is that the way you see things?
Mason will be active. I don't know how limited he may be, but you know the Chiefs' offense in regards to Kareem Hunt, they run the football. They ran the football 39 times against the Saints 2 weeks ago. This is not a pass-heavy offense anymore. They're not vertical. Obviously, Tyreek Hill is in Miami now. Rashee Rice is done for the season due to the injury. Hollywood Brown's not going to play this year. Like, their offense, despite having Xavier Worthy, it's a much more between the numbers, you know, not vertical offense. It is a over-the-middle, pound-the-rock kind of team, which may help San Francisco's case. The run defense certainly has to improve itself. But for San Francisco, I really don't think it matters who's in that backfield. I have a hard time believing they get anything going on the ground against KC's run defense. They've been too good for 5 weeks. It's not like a flash in the pan 1 week, oh, they're great, like San Francisco was against Seattle. It has been a continual, they are dominating and making offenses one-dimensional.
Yeah, I think the 49ers and Chris Jones and company and those guys up front, their linebacking core is so, so talented. But the 49ers' ability to run the football, obviously for any team, the play action sort of opens things up. You don't, as good as Brock Purdy is, you don't want to put everything on his shoulders. And so while Kansas City has, because something's got to give here, because Kansas City has been so good against the run, but the 49ers and that stretch zone has been so effective, whether it's Garendo closing things out against Seattle or obviously Jordan Mason coming out of nowhere. And of course, Christian McCaffrey, who had been so good. So I think establishing that run and the 49ers are certainly going to test them and they'll go after them. And if they get stoned and you have to have Purdy throw this thing 50 times tomorrow, it's going to be a real challenge. So I think that San Francisco has got to at least try and establish the run. And when you talk about the run, stick with Garendo, stick with Patrick Taylor, and stick with Jordan Mason if he and his shoulder are good to go. One thing I do not want to see, and I've said this right from the outset when it was Kansas City, and the 49ers and Deebo Samuel lining up in the backfield. No more of that. Like, you gotta bubble wrap Deebo. Deebo as your wide back, meaning if you want to get him in a jet sweep, you want to get him in a gadget, just get the ball in his hands. That I can understand. But this idea of having him being a second or third running back and just giving him the ball and having him trying to go off tackle, it's bad enough he's returning kicks. It's bad enough that he runs as violent as he is and he's as injury prone as he is, that you need Deebo Samuel. So I do not want to see him as an extra running back. But I think the running game is really going to go a long way in terms of determining whether or not the 49ers win this game. But Sterling, right back to my original question, who's winning this game?
I was so confident in both Super Bowls against the Chiefs, and I think I'm now jaded towards that. Thus, I think I will have to pick the Kansas City Chiefs with everything in my body. I hate doing so. It just feels like a mental roadblock for Shanahan and San Francisco. I just can't pick San Francisco until they prove to me they can jump this hurdle.
Carter Mondavi Chickering, who do you like tomorrow?
I like the Chiefs because the world seems to fall for this every time, that we're favored against them and all this, and I just do not understand how we can keep falling for this trick.
Wow, since when am I the voice of reason in the room?
Right.
Usually I'm going the other way. I'm never the homer, but you guys have put me in this position. I'm going 49ers. And I think that, again, this is going to be the coming out party for Brock Purdy. I think that people are going to recognize that he went toe for toe and knocked out one Patrick Mahomes. Listen, I think Kansas City is going to be there at the end of the day, meaning at the end of the season. But this high wire act that they've been on for so long over the last 6 weeks of the season, the first 5 weeks of the season, I should say, Yes, a lot of it can be attributed to the great Patrick Mahomes, but that's no way to live and die in the NFL. That's no way to sort of spend every Sunday having to rely on Patrick Mahomes to dig you out of a hole and provide a miracle towards the end, or a miracle finish, or throw a last second or last under a minute touchdown. Because as good as he is, at some point, you're going to lose those games. All right? At some point.
That's not been the case, though.
No, it
hasn't. Mahomes has not been the driving force at all.
No, they've run the football. I rest assured. Yeah, no, they've been old school. They're 3 yards in the cloud of dust. I think that when you think about the Kansas City Chiefs, you're right. There's a misperception that they like to go Texas Tech and Patrick Mahomes. Not the case.
This is
a team that wants, they're going to run. That's who they are. They're very old school. My point is that late in the game, it's Patrick Mahomes that has been digging them out with touchdown passes, and Patrick Mahomes who has made the big plays. And so I think that if that's your recipe to win, it's going to come up and bite you in the butt, because you cannot go through an entire season like that. So my point is that there's two ways of looking at this. If you're a Kansas City fan, you could say, yeah, we've been, you know, we have not played our best football. And we've won some games that maybe, you know, maybe we could have lost. And so now, because of the extra rest, the bye week, we're ready to play our best. We're ready to blow somebody out. The percentages are saying it's about time that we play and put together four good quarters and Patrick Mahomes becomes Patrick Mahomes. Or the other way to look at this is that you've been a team that's been masquerading and been getting away with some wins that only you do because of Patrick Mahomes, and that eventually you're not only going to lose a game, but you're going to lose a game convincingly to a good team. And I think that day is tomorrow, because I think Brock Purdy is, and the 49ers are going to dispel a lot of the myth that is the Kansas City Chiefs. That this is a team, and Patrick Mahomes, if he's within a touchdown or 10 points late in the game, you're going to lose. Like, it's Tiger Woods back in the day, circa 2009, and if he's in the hunt on Sunday, you're going to lose. I think at some point, that's all going to be thrown out the window and dispelled. And I think tomorrow is the day where the 49ers put together, because the 49ers, it's a good football team, and they haven't played really their best football. And I think that you're just seeing slowly them taking steps in that direction and getting they're still not entirely healthy, but getting healthier. And I think the confidence with Brock Purdy, and I think that this team is just, look, I could be wrong, and a lot of this is just gut, but I think that a lot of this is just going to, I really do think that the takeaway and what you're going to see from the ESPNs, the Fox Sports, and just sort of the national shows, the national takeaway is, we're going to be in Brock Purdy mania for about a couple of weeks or a month now. And I think that Brock Purdy is going to take over the reins as being that guy. And I think tomorrow is going to launch him because there's going to be such a big audience, and because his opposite number is going to be Patrick Mahomes.
Well, and this game, like, it means so much, yes, to the fan base for sure, but I have a hard time believing San Francisco views this as just another Sunday, and I get you kind of have to. You can get caught up in the emotions, but last year San Francisco, when they lost to Philadelphia in 2022 in the NFC Championship game, Brock, you know, tears his UCL, it's a disaster, it's a bloodbath at the Link. San Francisco walked in to the Link last year with their emotions on their sleeve, wanting to make it a point that we're going to walk in there and take it to you. And they destroyed Philadelphia, sent them on this catastrophic end to their year. And I want to see that San Francisco. And, of course, you want to see it when it actually matters, not in week 7 of the NFL season. But the Chiefs have been a thorn in their side, or at least on the opposite side of the field, through so many monumental games in Kyle Shanahan's tenure. 2018, Jimmy G tears his ACL against Kansas City. In 2019, you lose a Super Bowl, you blow that lead. In 2022, Christian McCaffrey makes his debut. Brock Purdy comes in relief for Jimmy Garoppolo. You lose that game handily. Now last year, another Super Bowl loss. There has seemed to been, the Chiefs are there every time San Francisco has this emotional, monumental loss or a change in their season. And now this year, it's Ricky Pearsall's debut. And Dan, maybe you're saying it's Brock Purdy's coming out party for the world nationally. I will say this, that every time, or at least the last few times San Francisco has played Kansas City, you go back to 2019 in the Super Bowl, they pick off Mahomes twice. The defense does their job. It seems like they're going to have that win. They obviously lose. But in 2022, Talanoa Hufanga picks off Mahomes in the first half. Things are tight before halftime, and of course, things fall apart in the second half. And then last year in the Super Bowl, San Francisco has a lead, or at least it's tied. Jair Brown picks off Mahomes coming out of halftime, and you're like, oh man, like Mahomes every time, at least the last few times, has been almost giving San Francisco every out to win this game handily. So I guess if you want to be optimistic on this, which I think Niner fans are, they believe they have a chance, which they certainly do, that Mahomes is playing the worst football he's ever played. This is the chance to beat Mahomes. He'll give you a turnover. He'll give you a takeaway. It's about capitalizing on that takeaway, and it always has been for San Francisco. Whether it's regular season or Super Bowls, the offense, if they can get rid of those dry spells, Mahomes will give you the chance to take a 10-point lead, a 14-point lead, and secure a win late. So, like you said, Dan, how many times does KC get to get away with a holding call in the end zone when it's not called against Atlanta, or a PI against the Bengals in week number two, or an Isaiah Likely toe out of bounds against the Ravens in week one? Like, this is a real chance for San Francisco to put all of that to bed and say, you know what? You haven't been playing your best ball. We're finally capitalizing on Mahomes' mistakes. So, you know, I don't want to be, you know, overly optimistic. I think KC wins this game, but the Chiefs are going to give San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan's offense an opportunity to grab that brass ring, and I hope that this is that opportunity. The Niners couldn't get past Dallas in the 80s. When they did, a dynasty was created. I'm hoping this can be that emotional win for this generation of Niner fans and this team, because they are too good to not have a ring thus far. This could be their Dallas Cowboys of the 80s if they win.
But after all that, you're still going with Kansas City.
Shame. It's like, despite everything that I just said, I have a hard time going against a team that's 5-0 with the best quarterback in football the last couple of years, the best head coach in football, that already has three rings, and the best defensive coordinator in football against San Francisco that, yeah, can win, has a great quarterback and a good offense, but has been kind of, you know, stumbling along this year. My question, I guess, really is the San Francisco we saw against the Seahawks who we're going to see this Sunday, or is it going to be the San Francisco we saw against the Rams and the Cardinals? Is that who we're going to see this Sunday instead? That is my concern.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. Anytime you have the best quarterback in the NFL, one of the best coaches, and one of the best defenses, you're going to be in every game. You're always going to have an opportunity, and that's who Kansas City is. I think speaking to the coaches, Kyle Shanahan is a competitive SOB, and he's trying to put on the right face and say the right thing when it comes to this week's game. He don't want to lose this thing.
And we said he had PTSD.
And he sure as hell does not want to. He recognizes that. Are you mowing the lawn? Or I'm getting some feedback here. I thought it was like your house is about to blow up, but maybe not. No, you're not hearing it on your end. Anyways, I think when it comes to Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid, much like that of Kevin O'Connell, LaFleur, McVay, he don't like losing to these guys. And I will – he's had 10 days for this game. And while Andy Reid gets really innovative, watch Kansas City. They'll come out with something that you've never seen before. He's had 2 weeks to prepare. He's going to come out with – you know, he will have a play or two that nobody's seen all year. Nobody's scouted. That's what Andy Reid does. That's why Andy Reid is part of the reason why he's as good as he is. There's a lot of reasons. But Andy Reid is going to have something in store for you. And that's not true for every NFL head coach. But Andy Reid will undoubtedly give you a formation, or he's going to run a series of plays where you're like, what the hell was that? That's what Andy Reid does when he has extra time. But Kyle Shanahan has heard enough about Spagnuolo, and he's heard about enough about the Kansas City Chiefs, and he has enough confidence in his ability to say, I don't really care. Because as good as you are as a defensive coordinator, I'm better than you as an offensive coordinator, a pseudo offensive coordinator, as a guy that's going to who's going to devise something that you can't stop. A lot of this is not necessarily X's and O's, but just sort of like where you're at as a team. And I just think the 49ers are ready to turn that corner and go on a little run here. And we, you know, they sort of sputtered, as have a lot of good teams at the beginning of the year. Look, at September, yeah. I've said this is an extension of the preseason. I've said this, the best team out of the AFC right now, if the season were to end, you know, last week and you were playing a Super Bowl, you'd rather play Kansas City out of the AFC than Baltimore. Because Baltimore right now is the best team in the NFL and the best team out of the AFC. So records be damned. I don't really care that they're undefeated. It's just about who's playing your best ball. And right now I think the 49ers, while they may not be peaking, but I think that when you compare to where they were just a couple of weeks ago against Arizona, where they were, you know, against some of the Minnesota Vikings, that right now is they're headed in that direction. And I think that's what this is all about, is making sure you eradicate those mistakes. And with that roster and with that talent and with Kyle Shanahan pulling all the triggers, that you begin to play 49er-esque football, which they typically do at some juncture during a season. And I think it's going to be they're going to go on a little run here. And Dallas is next. And then they get their bye. But I think this is going to be the beginning of the 49ers going on a little mini 4-5 game winning streak.
Well, I think this may be not the biggest game of the season for San Francisco, but a lot hinges on this game. Of course, you beat KC, you're 4-3. You mentally get over that hump that has been the Chiefs in your way. If you take it to Dallas, you walk into week number 9, the bye week, and that's the trade deadline. You want to be above 500. You want to have, you know, Nick Sorensen, first-time defensive coordinator, halfway through the year. You want to see that defense kind of rounding into shape. Hopefully you get Christian McCaffrey back and Dre Greenlaw back, and maybe, you know, Juwan Jennings and Tauno Hufanga again. And maybe at a certain point in time you add somebody. I think this game goes a long way into deciding what San Francisco's next few weeks look like, including the trade deadline. Do they go and get a Calais Campbell or go reacquire DJ Jones? Does a game like this, if you're the Niners and John Lynch, do you say, you know what? If we lose this game handily by 10-plus points, 14-plus points, do you sit back and say, you know what? I don't want to buy in and go acquire and trade further assets for a one-year wonder? Or does it make John Lynch say, you know what? I have to fortify many holes on this team. Maybe they bank on CMC coming back and whatnot, but I think this game goes a long way into deciding what San Francisco's rest of the season looks like. You have to win this game for sure, mentally and record-wise, but ultimately, this game could decide, you know, what this team and how much the front office buys into where this team can go when it's all said and done come playoff time.
Nick Sorensen, obviously the jury is still out. You know, every time I see that guy speak, he reminds me of one of those guys that you see living out of his van that's just getting tasty waves or just living at the beach, you know? He looks like he could rock the puka shells and just live like one of those guys. You don't know necessarily how they make their existence, but they're at the beach every single day. You know, you'd see these guys in Hawaii, or I see these guys down at the Dolphin Club, that these guys are there just like these sort of older guys. It just, they look like beachcombers, I think, as they used to say. But I think that the defense really, like, the defense to me is really, you and I sort of see this on, you see it on one side of the ball, meaning that the offense is sort of the question mark for tomorrow. To me, it's the defense just has not consistently been able to get off the field. And that's what you need to see, not only in this game, but I think if the 49ers are to have a shot at getting back to a Super Bowl, I think the defense has got to show some signs of being dominant again.
I guess I'd push back a little bit, because the defense got off the field against the Cardinals multiple times. Even when the Cardinals took that lead, they held them to a field goal and gave the offense a chance. The offense couldn't answer. Brock throws a pick. Against Seattle, the offense kind of goes through dry spells, and who comes up with the big pick again? Renardo Green, to help San Francisco's offense get in the end zone. So I think San Francisco's offense, while can be the reason they win for sure, I think more than the defense will be, but they are the ones that have to answer the call. They have not lived up to potential just yet, where the defense, with rookies playing cornerbacks and, you know, third linebackers and rookie safeties and backup defensive linemen, have done their job the last few weeks. And I think the offense has to answer that call if they want to win this game.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned Kyler Murray and you talked about Arizona. I think that the loss to Minnesota, I think now that you look at it, like Minnesota's could be a legitimate team and Sam Darnold is that guy, and the loss to Los Angeles, you know, the Rams and Sean McVay, they've had an asterisk next to that game and beating the Niners for some time, although it shouldn't have happened. But the one loss to Arizona is probably the one that's going to stick with them. That's really inexplicable. Yeah. Because I think Kyler Murray, you talk about giving guys extensions, that was a waste of time. Like that, the reason that I have no idea why that guy got money to play quarterback in the NFL.
I love Kyler. Kyler's so good.
Are you serious? He might have the worst attitude. Like, there's not more of a distant guy on a football team, I think, than that of Kyler Murray. You like the little guy? You like him and his bold legs? Like, you're down with Kyler Murray?
Well, first off, Boomer Sooner for life. That said, I think he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks in football. I get the Call of Duty jokes, and you know they have the clause in his contract, but Kyler is what most people want in a quarterback. He's just tiny. He's got the arm. He's got the legs. He makes the big plays. And against San Francisco on a fourth down, he just said, hey, screw it. Someone go up there and catch it, and gave his guy a chance, which is how they won that game. So I think Kyler, if he was 6'2", 6'3", we'd be having a different conversation about him.
The man is void of a personality, much like that of Tom Brady. Those two should sit in a room and interview one another. How you doing? Well, how you doing?
Hey. Getting no views.
Captain Boring. All right, we got to say goodbye for my man out there. And where are you from again? Where are you living? Where are you hiding out? Give me the name of that
city. Vesperia, California, and Witness Protection.
Man, it must be beautiful out there. All right, Sterling Bennett for my man Carter, Olivier, no, Mondavi Chickering. This is Dan Avone. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll see you back here next Saturday. So long, everybody.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.